Coming to you via the internet and your friends at PipesMagazine.com, it's the Pipes Magazine Radio Show. The show that is like bran flakes and prune juice for the brain. It flushes everything out. Now, I invite you to sit back, relax, the smoking lamp is lit. Here's your host, Brian Levine.
Welcome to the Pipes Magazine Radio Show. Yes, the sometimes irreverent, sometimes educational, but always entertaining weekly pipe smoking broadcast. And I'm your host, Brian Levine, reminding you, you must be of legal smoking age wherever you are in order to listen to this fine show. So if you're not, go ahead, turn it off. Okay, there you go. All right, and this week in pipe parts, we've got a Ask the Blender from the world-famous head blender, Jeremy Reeves. And then my guest is a newer pipe maker, Brian Laurent, who I got to meet in Chicago. Got to see his pipe, sat down with him. And I liked him automatically because he spelled his name with an I. So, yeah. So you get to meet him. Music by my request. Mailbag. In fact, a fairly good-sized mailbag. And lots of ratings and reviews on the old Apple podcast. So we'll get that. And rant time, all that coming up on this week's episode of the Pipes Magazine Radio Show. Remember, you want to do us a favor? Yeah, leave a rating and or a review on Apple Podcasts. Do the same thing over there on the Spotify's or wherever else. And the best thing you can do is share the Pipes Magazine Radio Show out to all your friends and all the pipe smoking groups that you're in on Facebook and all the hashtags that you're in on Instagram. Just keep sharing it out. Keep sharing it out, and that helps get more people listening. Also, if you are new to the show, please make sure that you are keeping current with the new episodes while getting caught up with the past ones. All right, and also lots going on over at pipesmagazine.com, including in the forums. You can always go over there. There's a free sticky note in the pipe repair or cleaning thing. And if you are a pipe repair person or a cleaning person, go over there, post your thing right there in the sticky for free. And you can also see any upcoming events, pipe related or not. Well, probably not or not, but any pipe shows, meetups, there's two places for those. One is right on the tab for pipe events or pipe shows. And then also in the forums, there is another one where you can go in there and post your meetup gathering or your pipe club. So lots going on over there. Make sure and check them out. All right, let's get the show rolling. So everybody sit back, relax, fire up a bowl. Thank you all for tuning in, and here we go.
We have arrived at 155. Missouri Meerschaum Company has been authentically crafting corncob pipes continually for 155 years. To celebrate, we're hosting a 155th anniversary celebration on Saturday, September 28th, 2024. There will be ticketed working plant tours, an exhibit on the corncob pipe industry by Skillet Fork Pipe Museum, a live podcast of the Gray Woody Show, a smoking tent for your enjoyment, and so much more. The 155th anniversary celebration will be held in conjunction with Downtown Washington's Fall Festival of the Arts and Crafts, with food, beverages, live music, and over 100 vendors. Visit our Facebook page at Cool Smoking Pipes for fun event updates and more information. Missouri Meerschaum Company, since 1869.
Have a look in your tobacco cellar. What do you see? Think of what you smoke, what you age, what you're drawn to in a blend that keeps you wanting more. That's your taste. And whether you know it or not, you've been leading that expedition since you first picked up a pipe. Just by smoking what you like and liking what you smoke. But the funny thing about taste, it changes. And you need a wide selection to accommodate it. We at Smoking Pipes know this, and you know it too. So whether you're searching for a tried and true favorite, or a singular boutique mixture, we're here to help you navigate the voyage of your evolving tastes. But you're still at the helm. Smoking Pipes, in faithful service of the hobby.
are back on the Pipes Magazine radio show, and for pipe parts, we have an Ask the Blender with Jeremy Reeves. Jeremy, welcome back to the show.
Brian, thank you so much. It is a pleasure to be here, for sure.
All right, so Ben sent me this question, and this goes back to March of 2023. That's how long it's been since we've, we recorded in the middle of the summer, but we had questions backed up, so you're a popular fella. Let's see. Ben says, hi, Brian. It was an absolute pleasure meeting you at the Country Squire. Okay, great. Yep. Love you too. Ben's from Canada. Question is, my question for you in regards to the white paper liner that's found in tins of tobacco. Seeing the paper yellow with age would mean that oil's moisture is being absorbed over time. So does that mean that while the tobacco ages, we're losing out on something? Also, is there any advantage to taking tobacco out of the tin and aging it in a mason jar, but keeping it in the paper?
Okay.
Yeah.
I suppose that it is possible, and maybe even likely, that as that paper yellows, that it is representing some amount of oil and therefore flavor that is being absorbed by the paper. I'll counter that by saying that I wouldn't imagine that it is a significant loss of flavor. Otherwise, I would think fewer people would endeavor to age their tobacco for 10, 15, 20 years and keep doing this. Yeah. If they felt like at the end they weren't getting something that was significantly changed and significantly deepened from what that tobacco might have been fresh. That said, if you wanted to avoid that loss of flavor, I would absolutely think that the way to avoid this, or the way to test this, would be to age your tobacco in a glass jar and not carry over the paper insert. That way you're aging your tobacco in a vessel that won't absorb any of those oils or flavors, and so presumably those things will remain intact, or at least become part of the air that is floating around in that jar. So I would not think that there'd be much benefit to transferring tobacco to a glass jar and using the paper along with it. I have never taken any of the packaging materials that were inside the tin and transferred those to a jar as well. We use the flake inserts really because we don't use a lot of binding agents. We rely on the natural sugar content and natural oil content of our tobacco to press into flakes. And so that gives us understandably less sturdy flakes than another blending house will have if they are using added binding agents like gum arabic or glycerin or heavy sugar casings to try and make their tobacco more sticky when they process their flakes.
Yes,
so we use those really to just hold together our more delicate flakes. But if you're transferring tobacco to a mason jar, I wouldn't think you would need to transfer the paper goods inside along with the tobacco. You could just move the tobacco to your mason jar. Any of the packaging materials that I've ever transferred to a jar have always been from the outside of the tin, just so I can apply the label on the outside of the jar for ease of identification. But even that is an added step that really is purely aesthetic.
Yeah, so you guys have one of the more complicated inserts because you've got all those double folds and wraparounds and bottoms and stuff, and it's like eight pieces.
Right.
Comes with IKEA instructions on how to assemble it.
the story of those things, we actually call them mouse ears here because when it's laid out flat, it kind of looks a little bit like the Mickey Mouse you know, three circles.
Yeah.
But the story with those was that we needed something that would hold a cake or you know, or a stack of flakes a little sturdier in the tin. And one of the guys, whose name was also Ben, that worked at Cornell and Deal many years ago, something of a creative and naturally a bent towards engineering. And he sat down and drew out this thing that, you know, he figured out where the folds in the middle portion needed to be so that when you press down in the middle of the center portion of the insert, that it would just all fold up, and then the two outer circles would fold in on top of each other. He just drew this on a napkin, and then we sent it to a laser printer, and they printed it out, and it worked.
Next time I finish a tin, I'm going to pull that out carefully and lay it out flat just to see. But
it's not perfect, but yeah. You could easily rearrange it so that it was, you know, you could make a Mickey Mouse logo out of one of our tin inserts.
and the reason for the tin insert is not to protect the tobacco while we, the pipe smokers, own it. It's to protect it while it's being transported, because, you know, that's a fairly violent time for it, right?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Once you're getting into the tin, you know, by hook or by crook, the tobacco is going to need to be broken up for you to smoke it. But we want to preserve the flakes in the best condition that we can during transport. That's right. Yeah.
And then the other manufacturers that use the coffee filter type thing, that's predominantly, if I understand it right, that's got two functions. One is to keep the tobacco from contacting the tin, the metal tin inside part. And two, it's so that when you open it and unfold it, you've got like a little packing tray so that you can pack over it and get all your, you know, get all your crumbs to fall back in there and close it back up. Right.
That's right. And also because the tobacco in those style tins is packed basically even with the top, yeah, of the tin in most instances. And so if you are twisting that lid off and there's nothing in it except tobacco, there's the risk that you're going to spill some tobacco out. And so having a tin insert there or a coffee filter helps to make sure that you don't spill tobacco out while you're going through the process of opening those lids, which sometimes can be quite contrarian.
Yeah, I guess the lid, well, I guess tobacco could stick to the lid, and then you pull it out and you got a little confetti explosion on your table or.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was perfect. So thank you. And thank you to Ben for asking the question. And, you know, as always, Jeremy, thank you for all your answers.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you, Ben.
We'll be back in just a minute.
This is Internet Radio.
Since its beginnings in 1876, Savinelli has become more than just a pipe factory. It's become a lifestyle. From sourcing the finest Mediterranean briar and partnering with local artisans to acquire unique accents, to expanding their catalog each year with new innovative series, Savinelli produces high-quality Italian pipes that serve as a reflection of your individual tastes. With a portfolio that ranges from rugged designs fit for the outdoors to elegant pieces destined for black tie galas, Savinelli is more than a mark. They're a way to help you make your mark.
We are back on the Pipes Magazine radio show, and joining us is someone who I got to meet at the Chicago Pipe Show. We got to sit down for a little bit, which was nice. I got to look at your pipes. You are a Brian that spells your name correctly, so you automatically get to come on the show because your parents know how to spell. So, upcoming, relatively new pipe maker, Brian Laurent, welcome to the Pipes Magazine radio show.
Thank you, Brian. It's an honor.
Yeah. We could just say, okay, Brian, and Brian, and Brian, and Brian, and that, and go back and forth. All right, but that would be boring. And the show's bad enough anyway. So let's get to know you, your superhero origin story. Where'd you grow up? When did you grow up? What'd you want to be when you grew up? And so on and so on.
Yeah. Well, I was born in 1979 here in Greenville, Michigan, the birthplace of the Meijer grocery stores.
Oh.
Yeah. Or as us Michigan people call it, Meijers. We make everything plural. I was born in Greenville, and then I spent the first 9 years of my life growing up in Stanton. It was a very good time for me, as in, it, you know, you're a new grandfather yourself, and congratulations.
Thank you.
But for me, my grandpa was actually one of my heroes in life, and so was my grandmother. My parents divorced when I was four, and they kind of went off to do their own thing. And my grandparents actually raised me from the age of 4 and 8. And those were very powerful years for me. My grandparents, you know, they lived off a $400 pension check that my grandpa got for working 30 years in the Carnation. And they just made everything work, but they had to entertain me. So a lot of my passions and skills actually come from them. My grandma to entertain me, put me in the kitchen, and my grandpa put me out in the yard. And so he had a lot of engineering stuff that he taught me, and it was a great time. So it was a very powerful moment in my life to have them. Then my mother remarried, and I moved to Rockford when I was 9, and I spent my weekends at my uncle's house learning how to build hot rods and construction. And so, and then in 8th grade, I found wood shop and fell in love with woodworking. And then as I was growing, going through the years, I did a lot of art and stuff like that. I took a couple classes at Kendall Art College. And then through my 20s, I got heavily into woodworking. I started a business called Reptile Oasis, building custom reptile cages.
Wow.
I also did acrylic paintings in the background to make it look like the reptile is in its natural environment.
Hang on a second, because I live in basically a reptile. Well, I live in a human cage in a reptile world down here in Florida. How big are these reptile enclosures? What are we? Are we talking like giant things with, you know, big snakes and all kinds of scary things?
Well, my cages started out at 2x2x3, and they went all the way up to 6 foot tall by 4 foot deep and 6 foot wide. And so, yeah.
Holy mackerel.
I don't do it anymore, but.
Yeah, but all right. You got me intrigued. Any weird animals that you ever built a cage for?
I had someone that had a ferret that wanted a custom built cage with a dream catcher painted in the background. I think that's probably the weirdest. And he was a truck driver that drove cross country, and the ferret went with him.
Oh, cool. Well, that, yeah. Boy, the cab of that truck must've smelled. Anyway,
ferrets are stinky.
Yeah. All right, and I know what you do for a living now, and it's quite fascinating for me. You might have a lot of business for it down here in Florida, but go ahead and tell everybody what you do, what your full-time job is.
Yeah, so my full-time job is I'm a dental technician, but to be exact, I'm an implant specialist, full mouth reconstruction specialist, color specialist, products. I got about 6 different titles, so pick whatever you want. I see patients. I work with doctors. I do all that. So, and that job I fell into accidentally, because I used to own my own business back in the early 2000s, where I painted houses. And what made me different from other house painters is I did faux finishes and murals. And when 2008 happened, it just killed construction. And I was painting a mural for someone, and they go, "How's work?" And I said, "It's not good." And he goes, "I know someone's looking for an artist to make teeth." And I laughed at them, and 14 years later, here we are.
Hey, you're painting my house. How are you at making teeth? That just seems perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it, luckily, like I said, from my background, I have a lot of engineer, mechanic, and artist background. So actually, the dental thing just combined all of it, because it's very mechanical. It's, you got to have an eye for color and value and shape.
Yeah. So basically, what you're saying is, I guess, starting with you know, living with your grandparents, you were born and destined to make things with your hands.
Yes. Yes. I mean, a lot of my family members were very poor, you know, and they just learned how to do things. One of my favorite things my grandpa always had was, you know, he was the type of man that couldn't just go out and buy anything. And he wanted a bench grinder to sharpen his lawnmower blade. And so he took a 2x6 and he had a little electric motor and he got a pulley and a belt and a grinding wheel and he made his own bench grinder. And I love that kind of stuff. You know, it's redneck engineering at its best.
Wow. Did he have all of his fingers?
He did. Yeah, he did. He even, you know, he built his own house and back in the 40s. And because of the war and everything, you couldn't buy windows. So he purchased one window and he learned how to duplicate it. And so a lot of my passions in engineering come from them. And yeah. I'm very grateful for that.
How did pipe smoking come into your life?
Well, so I, well, luckily this is a show 21 and up.
Yeah.
So I, when I was 12 years old, my buddies and I got a pack of cigarettes and it started there. And I smoked until I was 36. And I just kind of got sick of it. You know, all the chemicals, I was smoking Winston lights and just got burned out. And I literally threw the last pack away and walked away and didn't look back.
Wow.
But I was not a non-smoker for 3 years. And about 2019, I started missing those moments, not like the nicotine, but I was missing, like, you know, when you went to the pub with a buddy and you'd have a smoke and a beer after. And the biggest one is, you know, because I cook and bake from scratch myself. After you have a really good meal and you make yourself a cocktail and you go and you have a smoke, I missed all that. Yeah. So I got into cigars because, you know, I've had them. And I smoked cigars for 2 years, but that got very expensive. And plus, you had to take care of that humidor, and yeah. Keep moisture and batteries in it. I hated it. And it was so expensive. And, you know, for me growing up, I never had my grandpa's brother, Roger, smoked a pipe. And he was the only one I ever saw growing up smoking a pipe. And it was always that cherry blend, whatever that was.
Yeah.
And, but my grandpa, he chewed tobacco. And so I tried it once. That wasn't for me. But, and so during 2020, when they started opening everything up here again in Michigan, me and the missus went out to have lunch one day at one of our favorite delis. And as we were walking out of the deli, another guy come walking out of another building. And he stopped right in front of us out in the parking lot and lit a pipe. Oh. And I turned to the missus and I go, that's it. That's what I need. And it was just one of those moments that clicked. And that weekend, it's funny because I think of, you know, listening to your show and everything mm-hmm. you've ever talked about, like even like getting out there and smoking out in public. I mean, that literally was the aha moment for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, so that weekend, we actually had plans to go up north just to kind of get out of town for a minute and do some hiking. And I stopped into a local store up there that I knew sold pipes and pipe tobacco. And this kind of, you know, I've all those times that you've talked about how to introduce people to pipe smoking, mine was not a good experience. I walked into the store. I said, I want to get into pipe smoking. The guy hands me a $450 artisan pipe, a $200 Corona, and he tells me if I buy these two things at $700, he'll give me a free ounce of tobacco. And I turned around and walked right out. I go, I don't have $700. And I didn't realize, you know, so it kind of spooked me at first. But, you know, I've been, I had to call the one guy that I knew that smoked pipes all these years. And that was Jeremy Rush. I've been friends with him for 22 years. And I called Jeremy up and I told him what was going on. He introduced me to Tristan, the manager of the Indian River here in Grand Rapids. I went down there. Tristan sold me a corn cob pipe and three different tobaccos, Virginia, Aromatic, and English. And he sent me to Rush's. And I sat there with Rush, and Rush taught me how to smoke a pipe. And, you know, and on top of it, over the last 4 years, our relationship even grew tighter because, you know, sitting in his den and having a pipe and telling stories and stuff. I mean, it's everything I loved about it. It was like everything just clicked with everything I did enjoy about smoking.
All right, we're going to take a break right here. When we come back, we'll talk about pipe making and more with two Bryans. So stay with us. We'll be back in just a minute.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Reeves, head blender of Cornell & Deal. We know pipe smoking is a personal journey. That's why our small team of blending and production experts take a personal approach in every step, preparing tobacco products just for you. We source top quality leaf through the personal connections we've made around the world, hand blend that leaf, and carefully package each tin. Each product, from special releases like our small batch line, to our most popular mixtures like Autumn Evening, are made right here in South Carolina by professionals dedicated to providing the finest of smoking experiences. Lighting up a pipe is an exploration through evolving flavors, thoughts, memories, and even dreams. From our hands to yours, Cornell & Deal tobaccos are your passport for that voyage, provided by people who, like you, value the journey.
We are back on the Pipes Magazine radio show, visiting with pipe maker Bryan Laurent, and how lucky it is that you have Jeremy Rush of the Father of the Flame fame. Father of the Flame fame. I guess you can't say that too many times. But you just happen to know him. Is it true that everybody in Northern Michigan knows him?
Yes.
Okay.
He's kind of like Kevin Bacon.
Yeah. I was in Las Vegas standing out and smoking a pipe, and this couple comes up to me and they're smoking cigarettes, and we start talking. They're from Northern Michigan. I said, do you know Rush? And they said, yeah, we know Jeremy. I was like, okay, great. Anyway, so why the urge or the desire or the want to make a pipe?
Yes. Well, you know, I was like every traditional pipe smoker. I immediately went to the website and started collecting pipes. And, you know, I loved billiards and bings and all that. And as I started collecting pipes, I started kind of getting bored with the pipes I was purchasing and going through the website. And I start seeing these artisan pipe makers, and they're doing these awesome shapes and crazy designs. And I was interested, but not at that point to start making pipes. I actually, because of my furniture background, I figured I would start making pipe racks and start making a more modern day pipe rack, which I still do. And I figured actually that was my approach into the world. And pipe racks don't sell as well.
No.
No, people would rather buy a pipe. Yeah. And so, but I still wasn't interested in making pipes. And then even though I was friends with Jeremy for 22 years, you know, I knew he did movie stuff, and everyone said, well, did you see Jeremy's movie, Father of the Flame? And I said, no, I didn't even know he made one. And so I went, I talked to him about it, and I said, well, I'm going to buy a copy. So I bought a copy of the movie, and I came home, and I watched it, I'm not joking, 6 times in a row.
Oh, no.
And for me, I'm, especially the older I get, the more humble I become and patient and appreciative of the world around me. Because of my artistic background, I am a little bit of a romantic when I see certain things. And I'm watching these characters in this movie, like Lars and Nina and Lee. Yeah. And, you know, I'm looking behind them as they're telling their stories. And I'm seeing these old machines that are passed down and these old ways of doing things and some new. And that, I have to actually give a lot of credit to Jeremy in that movie, because it kind of sparked that interest. It really did. And I thought it was a very fascinating world. And, you know, and you got Mimo and his dad, it was just fantastic. And so I already had a wood shop, so I did the typical thing. I got a couple of those starter pre-drilled, already stem-made pipes, and I started playing around. And actually, because of one of your shows, you interviewed Bruno Nuttons.
Mm-hmm.
And Bruno Nuttons was actually the first artisan pipe I ever bought. And I got talking to him over DM, and he actually gave me some tips and kind of helped me out. And then I kind of put it away for a minute, and then all of a sudden I was just like, let's see if we can make a pipe from scratch. And so I ordered some briar and some stem material and everything, and I made my first pipe. And, you know, it's a little wonky and goofy. It smokes great. It's uncomfortable in my mouth because the stem's too thick. But I love the pipe just because it was a starting point. It has all these failures and lessons. And yeah. I still smoke it to this day. And I started moving forward. But, and I started making, like, you know, your billiards and your pokers. But just like when I was searching for pipes, I started getting bored. And I dropped them off to the Indian River store, and they did all right, you know. But when I decided to start making my own shapes, that's when everything started to change. And I'm watching these people, these customers light up. They're like, oh, my God, you know, and they start buying my pipes. And, you know, for me, when it comes to pipe making, the number one rule is the engineering, obviously. You know, it's got to smoke. It's a tool. But as far as everything around that engineering, you know, it's complete artist's expression. And with my pipes, you get to see all my interests and everything I've been through in life. And I put that into the shapes. You know, I still want them to be classy and stand with the test of time. But it's, you know, I just went for the art. And I don't want to go back. And I want to just keep moving forward.
At the time of recording, how many pipes have you made?
Oh, probably 50 almost.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot I gave away in the beginning. 10 or 12 pipes I gave away just to see how they smoke and get feedback from customers. And I took off from there doing my own shapes.
Do you want those first ones back?
Well, luckily they don't have my name stamped into them, so
there you go. Yeah, so at least you did the smart thing and didn't put them out as, you know, as a brand or anything, and do all that stuff.
Right. Well, I also didn't have my stamp yet, so.
Speaking of stamps, what is the brand? How do you stamp them? What's the grading system like?
Yeah. So. I stamp, you know, I got a custom made stamp. It says Laurent Handmade. It's a circle. At this point in time, I'm not stamping them with the serial number quite yet.
Okay.
Eventually I will be, that I have a lot of ideas to come. As far as the pipes, when I go to make them and the grain and all that, you know, for me, you know, I start out with an idea, but I also allow the briar to guide me as well. You know, the grain and the sand pits and all that. So I just kind of let it be its thing and develop into what it needs to be. And I love it. I mean, one of the things I love in life is challenge, and briar is definitely that thing.
So that's got to be your other experiences weighing in, where you're able to say, all right, I'm going this direction, and then you start getting into the wood, and the wood says, no, you're not, but you're allowing yourself to go to listen to the wood.
Yeah, and I love that. I mean, I think that's the greatest part about it, is it makes you sit. Sometimes you got to sit down and just stare at it and go, well, what's going on here? But the engineer part of me goes, how do you solve this problem?
Yeah.
And I love that. I mean, it's out of everything I've ever done in my life, I have to say that pipe making is that artistic medium that really brought everything together that I've gone through in life and experienced and learned. You know, some of the techniques I do come from auto body, from painting old hot rods. You know, I'm not using auto paint, but like some of the techniques and stuff like that. And so I'm using everything I know to make something beautiful. Or at least hopefully beautiful to someone.
You're not oil curing in 10W40, are you?
No. Okay. Well, I don't know. Is 10W40 organic?
I don't know. I heard it came from dinosaur juice, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, could be.
No, I tried to keep everything on my pipe as organic as possible. You know, to any of the finishes I use on it, and make sure I keep the chamber and the draft holes clean. And I just want to make sure that when you smoke one of my pipes, all you're getting is the tobacco.
Are there pipe shapes that are more fascinating to you than others?
As far as my own or other people's?
Both? Either?
For me, you know, when I went to Chicago, you know, I'm drawn to the rock stars for me is people like Nate King, and you got Edwins, and it's funny because like Edwins, I've always saw his work, and then finally I get to see it up close and hold it.
Yeah.
And even though it has all these points and stuff, it was very comfortable in my hand. So when I see other artists doing their own thing and making these shapes that, you know, they're inspired by, that just fuels me to challenge myself more, to push myself. My whole goal in this is to manipulate the briar in every way that I can until I run out of ideas. And then when I do, I'll shut the lights off and I'll go smoke a pipe. And I'll retire.
Or you make the perfect pipe and then you're done.
Yeah. Yeah. And just sit back and enjoy what I have to accomplish, whatever that may be.
Where are you starting out at price-wise now?
Around $250.
Okay. And how do people get a hold of you?
People can see my work on Instagram. One word, Laurent Handmade. LaurentHandmade. And then handmade. You can also see my work at www.laurenthandmade.com. Other than that, that's about it.
That's it.
Oh, and then you, like, I do sell out of the brick and mortar here in Grand Rapids, the Indian River.
So you can come up there, hang out, look at some pipes, and then and hang out with you.
Yeah. Yeah. I've met a lot of customers in there, and it's fun. I think the community is really cool. And I think that's the other thing it captures you and keeps you in, is all these wonderful people you meet. And whether they're opinionated or not, it's just awesome.
So now let's talk about production, because you've got a full-time job making mm-hmm. teeth and doing whatever you do for, you know, people that are flapping their gums. you've also got a young family of three.
Yep.
How are you going to squeeze in making pipes in with that?
Well, luckily for me, I only work about 30 hours a week at the dental lab. And then I put in 30, 40 hours in the shop. And, you know, that it is very tough in the beginning to find that balance and make sure that everything is being fulfilled and time with the missus and the kids and all that. I did get sick there in the beginning. I was pushing a little too hard, but yeah. Took a couple of weeks off and reassessed everything and just kept going. And I mean, I think it's just anything in life is figuring out what the balance is.
Are you able to also work in any other hobbies for yourself, or or am I just making a ridiculously funny joke?
No, I have many interests. You know, I because of working with hot rods, I work on hot rods still. I have one of my own. I still love to cook from scratch. I have a 5-year sourdough starter in my fridge, and you know, when the kids and the missus goes, we need bread. Okay. I put everything down, I go to the kitchen, I make bread, and I go back out and start making pipes again. You know, I still fulfill all those interests, but pipe making for me just took off, and it was very, you know, I spend 10 hours sometimes on the weekend in the shop in complete silence with no radio, no TV, just, and maybe that's just where I can meditate.
Yeah. Have you ever been working on a car and all of a sudden you said, wait, I see a pipe shape in there?
So yes, that started happening to me probably 2 months ago. And I got to talk to Lee about this in Chicago. And Lee's like, you know, I have a notebook next to my bed because I'll wake up in the middle of the night because I had dreamed about a shape. And I said, yeah, I'm starting to have these dreams. So I have a notebook now next to my bed. And, you know, sometimes they just come to you and you sketch them down and they become whatever.
I have dreams. So, I go to write them down and I realize Stephen King already wrote them. So. Never mind.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Eventually, do you want to work in full time pipe maker, part time tooth maker?
My goal would be to definitely get out of the dental industry. I would love to be a full time pipe maker. It's the customers are a lot better.
Well, and in some ways they're all the same because they're both items you put in your mouth.
True. That's kind of funny. Yeah, I didn't think of it that way.
If I showed you the stems on my pipes, could you rebuild my teeth based off of the indentations?
Probably.
I'm just thinking I might be due for a new set, but yeah. Anyway, Brian, we'll wrap this up with the fast five final questions. No right answer, no wrong answer, just whatever comes to your mind. Are you ready?
Absolutely.
So what is your favorite pipe?
I got the Golden Grail one day. Very lucky to walk into Indian River and someone decided to get out of pipe smoking. And Tristan allowed me to go through the pipes first. And there sat a Lee Von Arc. And I bought it.
Uh-oh.
And it's awesome. It was actually cool in Chicago to hand it back to him because he made that pipe in 1993. And to watch the artist touch that pipe again after all these years was very cool.
Yeah. What is your favorite tobacco?
I like Virginias and vapes. That's what I mostly smoke. But during the summer, I like to smoke Englishes outside because they keep the mosquitoes away.
Yeah. So. Boy, and you guys got some big ones up there, too.
Oh, yeah.
Giant things. I mean, they show up on radar. What is your favorite drink?
Bourbon.
Uh-oh.
I like a glass. Nice, clean. And then, you know, sometimes during the day, it's a Mexican cola, but it's mostly bourbon. Not when I'm working, though. I don't drink while I work.
What's a Mexican cola?
It's just a Coca-Cola made in Mexico.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the ones
the glass, with... Yeah, the glass bottles that have the natural sugar.
Yeah. Not the fake stuff. Yeah. All right. When it's time to relax, do you prefer a book, a movie, or music? And I realize as I'm saying this, I'm like thinking in between the bread making, the car repair stuff, the two jobs, and the kids, probably relaxing is 15 minutes in the bathroom.
Yeah. For me, luckily, I get to wear headphones all day long, whether I'm at, you know, if I'm not dealing with patients and stuff. So I do like a lot of audiobooks, but that's because I can listen to them on the go. But when I do sit down and relax, it's any Clint Eastwood Western movie. I love all of them. So I will sit down and I will watch The Good and the Bad and the Ugly or whatever. That's my thing.
And then finally, any pipe smoking, favorite pipe smoking related memory?
I mean, especially for me being so new, there's so many, but yeah. I'd have to say, you know, every moment I smoked a pipe with Jeremy in his den and outside of that, you know, and the Chicago pipe, you know, show, meeting so many people, both of those are big times for me.
Brian, thanks for coming on. Thanks for, you know, keep up what you're doing, and it'll be fun to watch your progress.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
And we'll be back in just a minute.
For over 150 years, Peterson has welcomed all pipe smokers. It's the preferred choice of the thinking man and the everyman alike, and our workshop too is a place of hospitality and warmth. Hi, I'm Glenn Whelan, and for me, Peterson is a family tradition I've known since my childhood. My dad, Tony Whelan Jr., worked at Peterson for 53 years and has been my home since 2003. From sweeping our factory on a Saturday morning, to managing our store, to now steering our international distribution, I've seen the craftsmanship poured into each Peterson pipe. It lives in Jason's discerning eye as he handcrafts our silver accents, and in Wojciech's able hands as he carves our rustications. It abides in Willie's grading and in Warren's papering. Peterson has welcomed us as contributors to its legacy, and it's a welcome we always extend to you. Cade Mila Falje, 100,000 welcomes, wherever you come from, whosoever you be.
This is Internet Radio.
And we are back. Yeah, do follow Brian and keep an eye on him and see what he's doing. Yeah. Let's try to get him out of the teeth world and into the pipe world. All right. For music this week, kind of self-serving, but this past week, we 35 years ago was when I proposed to my now wife. And the song that we were at a Bon Jovi concert, and the song that I picked out to propose to was the probably the most romantic of the songs that they were going to play that concert. So 35 years ago, we got to hear this song live, and I proposed, and she said yes, obviously. And now you get to hear it. It's Bon Jovi's I'll Be There For You.
One more chance, girl, I'll be there for you.
Well, what can I say? It was the 80s. That's what I considered romantic. I had more hair. Bon Jovi had way more hair than me. And back then, he could still hit those high notes.
What's this? A letter for me.
Mailbag comments or questions can be emailed to me, brian@pipesmagazine.com, or posted on Pipes Magazine on the Pipes Magazine Radio Show page. Just like Dino does every week, and going back to last week with Per Jensen, Dino says, some interesting suggestions in answering the questions about seasonal changes in tobacco choices. It won't affect my habits, which are to smoke what I want, when I want, but they may provide added enjoyment to beginning and even seasoned smokers, pun intended. I always enjoy Per's visits to the show. His nice words about the Chicago show were duly noted. Thanks. Pear speaking about tobaccos and blending is always an education, a master class. J.J. Gray and Mofro's Everything is a Song was a good choice. The lyrics are amazing. A good point in the rant. Always buy the product, not the tchotchke. Thanks for another fine show, Dino. You're welcome, Dino. And Casey Ghost says, I always enjoy your opening remarks on your show. This time I could listen to them and ignore them at the same time. Like Dino, I smoke my pipe where and when I feel like it with the tobacco of my choosing. Seasonal smoking, not what I have to do. I basically smoke the three blends I have in my rotation, and that is it. Sometimes only having one taste bud comes in handy. Yeah. I enjoyed your conversation with Pear very much. He is a pleasant personage on your show, and his discussion about tobaccos and blending are interesting to me on a superficial level, but it still comes down to taste, and I'm woefully lacking in that. One taste bud is a problem at times. I did kind of enjoy J.J. Gray and Mofro's song, but a little goes a long way. I think a lot of us have gotten caught up in the tchotchke trap in our lives. Good reminder to not do that. Very good show as always, Dan. Thank you. Let's see, what else we have? Nate the Great says, I'm a newish pipe smoker. What I mean by that is I became a regular pipe smoker in September of 2023. I stumbled upon this awesome podcast in January 2024, and I've been listening to current episodes and trying to catch up on previous episodes at the same time as suggested. Tonight, April 29th, 2024, I finally reached episode 100. I've learned a ton from the show as well as from YouTubers Mutton Chop, Hobbiton Piper, Flat Cap Piper, and others. I always look forward to Tuesday nights and I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. And thank you to everyone who contributes their knowledge and experiences. I look forward to many more fun and informative content in this show. Well, thank you. I like that. I'll keep them coming. And you got another 500 plus to go. And going back to last week, Lord of the Pipe Rings says, it's a delight every time Pear is on the show. I learn even more about the wonderful leaves that make up our beloved blends when you and him chat. Excited to try out this new line of blending tobacco. Can't wait to see what he has in store for the pipe world next. Yeah. I know something that he's got in store, but I can't tell you. And then J.B. Frady says, I feel like Brian Levine is the Conan O'Brien of the pipe community, and Per Jensen is Captain Holt from Brooklyn 999. Having met both people, I find it amusing to imagine this duo in person. The shared knowledge is always fascinating, and I can't wait to try these pound bag tobaccos in person. But my takeaway from this interview is, damn, I'd love to see a travel show where Per Jensen showed Brian around his favorite haunts in Germany. That would be, that'd be fun. Yeah, possible. Who knows? All right, Apple Podcast reviews. Had a handful of them recently. Much appreciated. And this one comes from Watershed Studios. And it says, 5 stars, valuable resource. I started smoking a pipe a little over 5 years ago. I discovered the Pipes Magazine radio show early on in my journey. I quickly realized just what a valuable resource it is. We're fortunate to live in a time when resources like the Pipes Magazine radio show are available to us. Brian does such a great job getting quality guests like pipe makers, collectors, tobacconists, blenders, and content creators. Thank you for all you do, Brian. Cheers, Barry Johnston. Thank you. I like all the different interesting people. And then Doddle Dude says, new pipe smoker, 5 stars. This is a great show, both very informative and entertaining. I've learned a ton by listening and now look forward to the new episode each week. Yeah. It's kind of nice when you get caught up, huh? Let's see if I missed this one from Austin. No, I've read that one. I'm scrolling down because there was one from Canada. There it is. From Mo Man via Apple Podcast Canada, because I figured out how to see those now. It says, Virtual Pipe Club, 5 stars. It's often hard to find others with whom to share a pipe. Never fear, Brian Levine's Pipes Magazine radio show is there to keep you company, inform and entertain. Going back to the older episodes is like stepping back in time and really helps one to appreciate how the pipe smoking hobby is evolving. Brian leads you through all the latest news and introduces interesting people in the hobby. Great company when one is puffing on their own. Yeah. I mean, that was the original thesis statement that I had for the show, is it should be a chance for you to listen in on a conversation that you might hear at a pipe club meeting or in your brick and mortar or at a pipe show. So there you go. Keep those comments coming. Much appreciated. And in just a moment, rant time.
There's nothing quite like working in my shop or smoking my genuine Missouri Meerschaum corncob pipe, an American legend since 1869. It's the coolest, smoothest pipe I've ever owned. Check them out at corncobpipe.com.
Thoid Floor, men's clothing, suits, shoes, ties, trousers, cufflinks, going up.
I beg your pardon, but on what floor might I find the luxury tobaccos, pipes, and accessories?
Well, I'll tell you, pal, if it's those things you's looking for, you need to visit tinbids.com.
Ah, yes, of course. You mean the pipe collector's auction site, right?
That's right, Mac. You can buy and sell pipes, accessories, and vintage and hard-to-find luxury tobaccos. You know, just like you were saying.
So I can sell my pipes and tobaccos, too? Why, that's just fine.
Yeah, you bet your life, buddy. So, what'll it be?
Can you take me to the floor where the computers are then?
What's a computer? Visit tinbids.com, the pipe collector's auction site, and sign up today.
Cowboy. Cowboy.
Okay, kids, refresher course time. What's my motto? If you smoke a pipe and you smoke tobacco in it, I don't care what kind of pipe or tobacco it is, you are a friend of mine. And I say that to remind you, because right now, apparently, there is a rift amongst the YouTube pipe community of people that, don't agree with each other. And it's getting nasty. Well, I have no tolerance for that. None whatsoever. If you smoke a pipe and you smoke tobacco in it, you're a friend of mine. If I think differently than you do about a pipe or tobacco or, dare I say, religion or politics or finances, that's okay. Let's have a conversation, but let's not say that you have to do it my way. No, that's not the way it works. I can picture vividly in my mind a moment sitting at the Chicago Pipe Show where I'm sitting next to Dino, a Greek Orthodox, big old jolly happy guy. And on the other side is Fred Janusik, Polish-born, Polish family raised in Wisconsin. You know what? We are a melting pot. We are a melting pot. There are men, women, all cultures, all origins, all races, all religions, everyone at a pipe show, everyone in this pipe community. We are a melting pot. And remember, if you smoke a pipe and you smoke tobacco in it, then you're a friend of mine. I don't have to believe exactly what you believe. We can have a conversation about it, and then we can agree to be friends afterwards. Maybe somebody will change their mind, but it'll be a cordial conversation. If you are full of hatred and just don't think that other people are doing what you should be doing, well, I hope that you're so full of hatred that your pipe burns so hot and bitter that the bowl falls off into your lap and burns your little parts. Okay? There you go. Don't bring any hatred into the pipe world. We are a little island of social people that have respect for each other and enjoy each other's company. There you go. Comments, questions, email me, brian@pipesmagazine.com. Remember, brand new episodes of the Pipes Magazine radio show come out every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern time. Thank you to Jeremy Reeves, as always. Thank you to Brian for joining me, which sounds kind of redundant, I guess, or repetitive or weird. Anyway, thank you all for tuning in, and until next time.
About the clouds when we're together, just sing a song and think about sunny weather.
Was it authentic frontier gibberish? It expressed a courage little seen in this day and age.